Welcome back into Sports Talk. Keeping up with the college football playoff going on right now. It's the end of the first quarter at the Orange Bowl. Notre Dame Fighting Irish and Penn State Nittany Lions scoreless there. Definitely be updating you throughout the show from the gridiron. We're going to go to the diamond now, and happy to welcome in D1Baseball.com SEC analyst Mark Etheridge. Always appreciate the time, Mark. How the heck have you been?
Oh, man. This is a great time of year. You got football going on, you got the playoffs, you've got baseball kicking off practice on Monday. I mean, you have games in a month. I mean, this is a great time of year.
Yeah, between the Saints struggling this season and the Pelicans right now, me and my co-host here, Charlie, we're just dying to get to the college baseball season and hoping LSU can save us from the misery we've been dealing with so far.
Yeah, well, I got good news for you. They're going to be really good. There's been a huge talent influx. I mean, lost a lot of players off last year's team. I mean, if you look at it, a lot of the everyday position players, but just about all of the pitchers that threw primary innings last year are gone. But the good news is that LSU is just kind of a reloading process. Jay Johnson and staff went out. They brought in some impact transfers. They've got some guys who are on, who have been proved from, we'll just say secondary roles last year, who should move into primary roles this year, and then also, I mean, there's a freshman class that really sets up well for the future. I really like what I see from LSU. We met as a D1 baseball staff earlier this week and debated our top 20 and our top 25. We went for over 3 hours trying to decide, who we like, who maybe we like a little less. And LSU came out pretty well on that. There are really high expectations for the Tigers heading into this spring.
I can't wait to see y'all's top 25 ranking, Mark. I just want to, get started off with some of these players, kind of introducing the new faces. Because as you did mention, a lot of pieces are gone from last year's team, so it's going to be a lot of new faces. One of the faces, though, first I want to ask you about and kind of the expectations for him entering this year. I'm really excited to see Chase Shores. And he's not one of the transfers. He's been at LSU for a while. He missed all last year recovering from Tommy John that he underwent in April of 2023. I don't know, Mark. I think this dude, like, early on weekend starter potential for the Tigers, I think he's going to be awesome for them.
Well, if you remember 2 years ago, he was a highly regarded freshman who came in, and he even started on the weekend early in the year. And
right.
He was a high 90s velocity, and he got injured, and he missed all of the rest of the title year, and then missed all of last year. And he was actually really close. He kind of flirted with it, being able to come back for the postseason. And Jay Johnson mentioned in one of our offseason conversations that had LSU made the super regionals, Chase Shores would have been available to pitch. That's how close he was to being ready. And that might have made a difference for them. Might have carried them to Omaha, because he's a really talented pitcher. He's a junior, he's draft eligible, and he's a first round profile type of pitcher. When I saw him this fall, he was throwing 98, and he had a really good slider. It was a little bit inconsistent, but when it was on, it was an out pitch. So you have to think that as he continues his his maturation and his development post surgery, that he's going to be a guy who could be one of the best pitchers in the conference. Because it's the velocity's there, the stuff is there. It's just he just needs time on the mound.
Looking at some of the young guns coming in, this the freshman class for this LSU squad. Like you mentioned, a lot of top names. What can you tell us about this outfielder Derek Curiel? That I know a highly rated guy that everybody's excited to get their eyes on.
Yeah, he's the best outfielder on the team. I mean, and there's a lot of competition for that spot. I think he's going to be an everyday player. He's going to hit near the top of the lineup. He's a guy who's, I think he's going to be more bat tool than power, at least right away, but the power will come. And I think, he's athletic enough. He can do some things on the bases. It's just you remember how Dylan Cruz was his freshman year. He wasn't quite the power guy that he became. And I think that's where Curiel is right now. I think he's going to be one of the top freshmen in the country. He's, I would guess, probably hit, probably second in the lineup, second or third, one of those kind of guys, and just play every day. And he's kind of the heir apparent. I think he's going to be the next one. Maybe that's too much to put on him right now, but certainly he's going to play a lot his freshman year and by his sophomore and junior year. I mean, he's got everything you need to be the next guy, right? To follow that lineage of great LSU sluggers.
And then looking at some of the new pieces, talking about the transfer portal and reloading this roster, as Jay Johnson always does, a couple of really exciting faces. I want to first ask you about the pitching side of thing with Anthony Ianson, who transferred in from UC San Diego. Another guy that's really highly regarded from the transfer portal that Jay Johnson was able to bring to Baton Rouge, and kind of how he projects in his first year in the SEC.
Yeah, I would think that he's going to be one. Certainly, if he's not a weekend starter, he's going to be in that mix. He's a transfer from UC San Diego, played for Team USA last year. Mid-90s velocity, really good breaking ball. Understands pitchability. I think he's an advanced guy who's ready to come in and test his wares in the SEC, the best conference in the country. And I think he's a guy. One of the ones I'd like to mention is Connor Ware. He's a junior college transfer. He was at Pearl River Community College last year. Was injured, didn't really throw a lot, and that's the only reason he made it to campus. Because he made it to campus, honestly, I think he was LSU's best pitcher this fall. He was just blowing people away. The time I saw him, he threw two innings and struck out five batters, didn't allow a hit. I mean, he's just kind of one of those guys that just understands how to pitch, and he's got really good stuff. I think he's someone who probably maybe some people don't know about because he was injured last year, who's going to come in and play a huge role. Maybe he could even be like, he could be like a Griffin Herring, right, who had a varied role last year. He could close, he could play long relief, he could start if you needed him to. I think he's a guy who could fill a lot of spots for LSU this year.
And then another key transfer from Utah Valley, Daniel Dickinson. I remember, Mark, we talked with you about like the plan for him coming in, because you had Jared Jones returning and Stephen Milam at second base, and then Michael Braswell returning at shortstop. And so we're kind of wondering what the plan would be for Daniel Dickinson, because the talent's fantastic. He was one of the top players out of the portal out of Utah Valley, 369 career batting average there. Their plan to potentially play him at third base, if I'm not mistaken, Mark, and kind of keep the rest of the infield basically what it was last year, just a year advanced.
Yeah, there's a lot of flexibility there between those three guys, with Dickinson, Stephen Milam, and Michael Braswell. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they all kind of move around a little bit and they try to find that perfect balance between the three, because they are all kind of similar defensively. I think Dickinson, the thing to watch with him is, how does he handle SEC breaking stuff? I mean, he's going to see stuff that he hasn't seen at Utah Valley, but he's a very competitive kid, and I think he'll be able to adjust. I think that's the thing, though. I mean, it's when you come in with the highly regarded stature that he did, I mean, one of the top players in the portal, there's a lot of pressure on you, and I think maybe LSU will kind of slow play him a little bit and not throw him into a high profile role and just see what he does, and then let him kind of find his balance. And then I think he could be a guy who could be a huge stretch run kind of impact player, because he certainly got the talent.
We know that the SEC is a gauntlet, minor league baseball that we get to watch in college constantly. Just wondering, who are the other heavy hitters that we can expect to really challenge LSU this year?
Well, Texas A&M will be the preseason number one team in the nation. I mean, they returned so much from last year, and they added a lot. I mean, even with losing Jim Schlossnagel, their head coach who moved over to Texas, they promoted one of their assistants, Michael Early, who's a younger, head coach. So that's obviously a concern. You have first year head coach, never been one before. He's got to figure out how to live life in the toughest conference in the country. But their talent is just so overwhelming. You got to think that they're the team to beat, at least from a talent standpoint. I think otherwise, you got Arkansas, who's probably got the best pitching staff in the country. The question is, are they going to hit enough? I mean, they've got honestly, 5-6 guys who would be probably more than that, honestly, 7-8 guys who would be weekend starters anywhere else, and they're just going to have to find roles for them. I mean, it's kind of that kind of embarrassment of riches. Tennessee, the defending national champions, they lost a ton, kind of like LSU did, but they reloaded well. And Tennessee's a developmental program. The transfers that they bring in are usually impact players. They don't bring in that many, and they're able to continue to develop, you know, the freshmen and who become sophomores that they bring in. I think they're going to be really good. And I think the other ones to watch would be Georgia. Georgia's kind of done something different in the SEC. It's, they've relied heavily on the transfer portal. And it's, you know, Georgia's traditionally been a high school hotbed, and they brought in tons of great freshmen. And new coach Wes Johnson, who was at LSU, has kind of flipped the script a little bit. And he's gone out and grabbed older players from the portal and brought those in. And on paper, they look really good. So it's just a question of how all those new faces mesh together. Can you get everybody pulling in the same direction, because talent wise, that they're incredible. And the other team I would mention would be Florida. Florida, you remember last year in the regular season, kind of had a so-so mediocre regular season, and then figured it out in the postseason, made it all the way to the College World Series Final Four. They have a lot of their position players back. They lost Jack Caglione, you know, the two-way star who was, you know, arguably the best player in the country. So finding who's going to be that guy, right, I think for them, because they've got a lot of really good players. Who's going to be the one person they can look to carry them, you know, when they really need it? I think those six in the SEC, you know, with Texas A&M, LSU, Arkansas, Tennessee, Florida, and Georgia, that's the top tier. And then there's a whole bunch, you know, right behind them. I mean, we can go on with this. I mean, they're probably 13, 14 SEC teams that have maybe even more than that have legitimate postseason aspirations. It's probably everyone but Missouri. And then, you know, if you're Missouri, you're thinking, well, why not us? You know, everybody else is this good. Why can't we get there? So I do think that the SEC continues to get better and better every year. Adding Oklahoma and Texas to the mix is only going to make it deeper and more challenging to accumulate wins. And as a result, it's going to be really fascinating to see at the end of the year. You know, the SEC got 11 teams in the postseason last year. They added two. I mean, Texas and Oklahoma, who made the postseason, well, that's 13 right there. I mean, what's really realistic, you know, is for postseason berths as we head into the postseason?
It's going to be a gauntlet once again, Mark. And, you know, it's funny that, like, your comments about Arkansas just feels like an echo every single year with the Razorbacks, doesn't it? But just also, you know, I wanted to highlight Wes Johnson and what he's done with Georgia, because, you know, Georgia was not necessarily in the dumps, but it seems like they really kind of rose out of nowhere in Wes Johnson's first year. I remember we talked with Joe Healy about this. Trey Phelps, like the freshman phenom, now going into the sophomore campaign. You know, I'm intrigued by Georgia in 2025 and seeing what they can do in Wes Johnson's second year.
Yeah, offensively they look like a 1-9. There's no holes. That kind of team. And it's going to be fascinating. I mean, Slade Alford was a really good hitter for them last year. He returns. Kobe Branch, Trey Phelps, all those, you know, those are returning guys. But they added some really good players out of the portal. Devin Obi is a Duke transfer who joined in January. Nolan McCarthy, who was at Kentucky on their they tied for the SEC title last year. He was their center fielder. He moved over. Robbie Burnett, the UNC Asheville transfer, he's a really talented player, maybe a little undersized, which is why he's not in pro ball, but a really productive player. And they just keep going on, man. I mean, they brought in, you know, 10 to 12 transfer position players who all think they're going to play. So if they have any injuries, if they have guys slumped, they want to play matchups, they have all of those options available to them. So it's going to be it's a different way, you know, as opposed to bringing in a lot of freshmen and hoping they develop. They're bringing in guys who have proven themselves, usually at lower levels, but it's going to be, you know, just I'm really curious to see how this all works out, getting them all, to buy in. And that's Wes's job is, he chose this path, and it's going to be one of the bigger storylines in the sport this year to see how this all materializes.
Mark, I was really, looking ahead. I wanted to see, if A&M and Texas played each other this year, and they do. But they play in Austin, unfortunately. Indeed. I was very disappointed at that. But I really want to see Jim Schlossnagel's return to College Station. But I want to get your thoughts on Schlossnagel's first year at Texas and kind of what the expectations are for him. Because I know we talked a little bit about the exit and how kind of controversial it was when he left A&M for, hated rival UT in their first year in the SEC. Just kind of get your breakdown on all that.
Yeah, I mean, he did such a great job at A&M. And the way he left was such a, probably the only way I could put it is he would like, I have to assume he would like to, I could do over on how that happened. He didn't handle it as well as he could have. And when you, now that, you got hurt feelings and they're going to get, as you mentioned, A&M's going to go into Texas, and that's going to be an incredible matchup. I have to imagine that we'll have one heck of a struggle within the D1 staff to see who gets to cover that. Kendall Rogers is kind of the head D1 guy, and he's also living in Houston, so he's got a head up on us. But that would be a great story to tell. I mean, it kind of tells itself, doesn't it? And I do think that Texas, I mean, Schlossnagel has won everywhere he's been. He's an incredibly intelligent coach. He understands how to play the game. He built an incredible program at TCU and then was doing it again at A&M. I mean, remember, if Braden Montgomery doesn't get hurt last year in the postseason, maybe they win the whole thing. I do think that he's going to win at Texas. The question is how long is it going to take? Right? It could take more than a year or two. And certainly when the program he left, A&M, is preseason number one, that's one more factor in this equation, right? So I think that Texas will hit. Schlossnagel teams always, they draw a lot of pitches. They play up to their ability. They're not going to underachieve, and I think as a result, they're going to go as far as their pitching takes them. And they've kind of got a rebuilt pitching staff, and as a result, maybe it's not quite to the level of some of these other teams that we talked about. But I think on any given day that they can certainly compete, and as a result, they're going to be a top 20, top 25 kind of club this year. And it's only going to, based on his track record, I have to assume they're going to get better each and every year, especially with the whole, with NIL changing things, the house settlement, all of these things are going to go in Texas's favor. And as a result, he's going to be in a really good program going forward.
Mark, definitely always appreciate the knowledge you drop on us. Thanks so much for your time again today.
Thanks, Mark.
Absolutely. Take care, guys.
Mark Etheridge, D1Baseball.com, SEC writer. You can check out all his great work there. Follow him at Mark Etheridge on Twitter.